So for the benefit of the listener, my co-host is wearing what is an absolute cut and dried spitting image of Ben Kenobi's outfit on Tatooine in A New Hope.
It's called a jalaba. It's from Morocco. Mm. It's very comfy.
He looks like a sort of Jedi Mr. T with his gold microphone. His massive beard.
It's got a hood as well, though.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow. These are not the droids you're looking for. It's happening.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, very good. So what we were going to talk about today is why we find... Well, I don't know. Is it that we find it difficult to promote our podcast, or do we...
But I think we start with the fact that we haven't in any way promoted this podcast. Mm. We've now published 18 episodes. Probably more by the time we press go on this one. Mm-hmm. And we have not taken a single step to...
it's not entirely true. I tweeted from our Twitter account twice.
Nice. Yeah.
At your urging, you said we need a hype Twitter account, and I did it twice.
It was hype. It was also over Christmas, and no one listened to our Christmas episode. I think that was probably a poor move.
Did no one listen to it at all?
Five.
Well, you know, five is five.
Yeah, and that's not including bots. So,
okay.
They strip that out of the numbers we get
well, that's
given.
Nice. Well, I mean, why are there just sort of free roaming bots doing things?
I don't know. But half our listens are from free roaming bots.
What?
Well, I mean, this is the same with website visits. So if you have any website, it shows you the stats of how many hits you get, how many people visit it. Mm. And most of them are just bots roaming around the web.
Is that sort of
looking at stuff?
Just programs that are just looking for, just sort of, you know, drinking in data for lols or something. Like, what is that? What are these bots? Who's making them? What are they?
I don't really know. I mean, the big one's obviously Google that goes around and looks at everything every now and then.
Okay, so that would be a bot. Google's sort of search bot.
Yeah, I think they're called a crawler. And there'll be similar things for similar purposes. And then various nefarious bots.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really know what their agenda is and why anyone would have a bot that's listening to.
I like to think that the bots, you know, the nefarious bots that listen to our podcast are going to sort of, you know, reflect on their own nature. And, you know, maybe they'll turn out to be good bots.
Right, I've heard this in relation to AI at the moment. Like, at the moment, you have all these AI models being built and ingesting all the data on the internet, and it's almost the duty of every human to kind of set out their stool and put their thoughts out on the internet. So then these thoughts get incorporated in every AI model that happens since then.
Yeah, it's a really interesting way of thinking about it.
Can
AI...
We live on.
Does AI get a transcript? Do you think it would get a transcript of our podcast? Can it listen? I don't know. Can AI listen to things? I don't even know that.
I don't know if it... I mean, I imagine they have a bot that does a transcription of the podcast.
Yeah.
It just goes through everything on... I mean, probably if you're training... I mean, there are AI models that do podcast, and you can just generate a podcast.
Really?
Yeah, and so I guess to achieve that, they've trained it on a lot of podcasts.
Yeah, okay.
They probably weren't very discerning in what they chose to feed it.
This is mental. So already, I mean, I thought we were going to be talking about one thing, but this is—I can't believe this. This is a very strange idea. Okay, well,
yeah, I don't even think that a model would put any more weight on us for having promoted this or having lots of listeners. Like, I don't know whether maybe these models were actually weighted towards all the kind of crackpot podcasts with three listeners.
Well, yeah, I mean, I suppose you wouldn't really want to bias your model to what is already gaining humans' attention, because then you're just replicating the fallibility of humans, right? And you're not adding value.
Yeah, you're not getting the full picture, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know. It's all so confusing. I mean, what is a large language model? What is a deep neural network? I mean, I've seen visualizations of it all, but it's like I've heard somebody say that really they're just clouds of sort of fractal numbers. And I'm like, I sort of go, and I nod along, and I'm like, I don't know what that means. What is a fractal number?
An engineer I work with sort of explained it as, it's just a whole load of big matrices that they just bounce numbers around and it spits out, you know, a podcast.
I get the idea that you sort of have, you have one layer of sort of nodes that kind of go, you know, okay, well, right, there's that letter, and so this node lights up, and then that sort of evolves connections in sort of to sort of deeper nodes, and then eventually a load of nodes will output another letter, basically, and it's all done by sort of adaptive training. So it's not like you design a sort of a formula for what the output should be given the input. You just sort of say, well, here's all the input, and we like this output and we don't like that output, and over time it learns to give you the outputs you want, right? Is that right, of a neural network?
I think so, yeah. They're just constantly guessing the next word that it thinks you want to hear.
Yeah. So I kind of get that. I mean, that's a story that makes sense to me. But I mean, what these actual nodes are and how this is... I mean, is it on a circuit board? I don't even know. Like, it's just too... It's too obtruse, you know? It's too... I don't understand the mechanism. Is it electrons bumping into each other? Is it logic gates? Is it actually a physical piece of silicon? I mean, I suppose it's the interaction of a load of like electromagnetism with silicon, isn't it? I mean, that's what it actually is.
Yeah, but I mean, the same is true for a lot of things that aren't AI.
Yeah, no, I know, but you know what I mean.
No, it's a thing on a computer, and as such,
but in what electrons sense is it, and silicon are, but in what sense yeah. is it on a computer? This is what I'm trying to get to. Like, it's not like a circuit board in a computer. It's a
Knows Windows.
No, I know that. I know. But I get the idea that, you know, Windows is a sort of an instruction manual for the circuit boards for how to do things for what it wants the circuit boards to do. Like, I kind of get that. I mean, is that right? And it ultimately does go down to the circuit board level, because you have to program the sort of, you know, there's a point at the sort of the base code, right, where it's like that particular electron needs to move to that particular bit of the circuit.
Yeah, I mean, that's what NVIDIA do, but no one building an actual model or training one has any idea of how that works.
No, well, really. This is what disturbs me about it, is that it's also, I mean, I don't understand.
Yeah, I'm treading very carefully here, because although I do work with AI quite a lot, and I've helped train models and actually for my entire career in tech startups, AI has touched it, even in the early days, but... Yeah, ask me how it works, and we've already had comments about when we go too off-piste on subjects that we know kind of not quite
everybody.
Enough about. And
sorry, everybody. I mean, I'm just noting that I find it very alarming that I can't even begin to get my head around what the sort of actual base level physical processes are in all of this. It just all seems to be so abstract that.
But
anyway,
it's the same with Microsoft Excel. Like, ask me how that works. I could not help you.
Yeah, I mean, I guess that's true. Anyway, so why haven't we... we can just edit all that out. Sorry, listeners. Or sorry, AI, that listens to that. You're probably quite insulted by our...
I'll tell you what is insulting to AI.
What?
A colleague of mine uses ChatGPT as a calculator.
Wow. Why doesn't he just use a calculator or his phone like a normal person?
Yeah, I mean, I think, especially when you want to get, you know, 83 as a percent of 124, like, on your phone you've got to worry about where the divide sign is and stuff like that. Whilst with ChatGPT you just say, what is 83 as a percentage of 134, and it tells you.
To be fair, I have been known to Google things that I would usually use a calculator for. I have actually done that quite a lot.
Yeah, I just thought of like all the technology, all the expense, all the electricity that's going into multiplication. That was one of the recent moments where I'm like, okay, we're living the future here,
right?
Where you're using something as exotic and advanced as ChatGPT as a calculator. And not even thinking that's an issue.
Yeah.
Like, that is up there with those two rocket boosters landing with the Falcon Heavy takeoff, or the booster being caught more recently. you know, those are moments where, okay, we're in the future now.
Mm. Well, I definitely
use a calculator.
I definitely had that feeling of sort of hair standing up on the back of my neck and sort of chills when I'm watching those. I remember watching those rocket boosters land for the first time.
Yeah,
however many years ago it was, and I was like, "Oh my, this is unbelievable! I actually cannot believe my eyes that that's real. That is so cool."
Yeah,
and then with the chopsticks capturing the booster, I was like, "That is." Again, I had the same feeling. I was like, "That is amazing."
But
there's something about the, you know, it's the, like the thing weighs like 100 tons and it's got flames shooting out of it.
Building,
it's, there's a massive piece of heavy metal engineering going on, and you just think about the forces involved, and it doesn't even have any wings, and it's just falling through the sky.
And it's just like welded out of steel.
You're like, that is unbelievable, right? And I kind of get that. But then, you know, with AI, and everyone keeps saying, oh, this is the most important invention ever. And I'm just thinking, well, but isn't it just a sort of a flavour of goo? Like, I don't understand.
An autocomplete.
Yeah.
I mean...
I use it for occasionally summarising things, you know. Summarise a PDF, extremely useful if you don't have time to read it all.
Yeah. Or an intern, yeah.
Yeah, I don't have an intern. It will shock you to know. I use it for generating some sort of, you know, some helpful prompts or something for something I'm trying to do, like occasionally, you know, very useful. Or sometimes very useful for if there's something sort of historically that I need to know about and I don't really know very much about it. It's just going to AI and being like, can you summarize, you know, the key things I need to understand for, I don't know, the Russian Revolution, and it'll do it really well.
I used Wikipedia for that, but it got a bit politically charged.
Well, but I just don't understand. I don't know. It doesn't give you that because it's so abstract. This is what I was sort of trying to get to. So inarticulate.
You understand?
It's
very
I understand. Like
a rocket
falling out the sky and being caught, and you're like, whoa, you know. But it's all of this kind of numbers, fractal numbers in a sort of cloud in a neural network, and like what is it? I don't get it. Maybe that's why it's so terrifying and scary. I don't get it. But anyway, we got onto this because we're not promoting the podcast. But perhaps one reason is that we're easily distracted.
We are easily distracted. And slightly afraid of technology as well.
Yeah. Just afraid of modernity, full stop. It's not made of metal.
No. No, don't believe it.
Don't want it. Yeah, I guess we're kind of like... Well, I mean, we've said before that we're sort of both have a sort of neo-Victorian sort of bent in our own different ways. Maybe that is part of it. I don't know.
Yeah?
Maybe.
I think there are other aspects of our neo-Victorianism that has more of an impact here.
Okay. Like an absolute horror of promoting oneself, I think, is...
Yeah, that is core.
Yeah. I just can't do it. I don't know.
Vulgar.
It is vulgar, isn't it? I mean, I just... You know, like, I love The Rest Is History because it's really well produced, it's very slick, and it's entertaining, and you can rely on it. And you know what? It's genuinely interesting. You know, the ones they've just done on the Caesars, fantastic. I'm a classicist. I learned a lot and I was entertained and it was very well done. But, you know, when they're reading out those adverts and they're doing all of their thing about joining the Rest Is History Club and all of that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's kind of humiliating, isn't it?
I just feel sorry for them because I just, there's something about it that is just a bit, I don't know. I don't want to sound like I'm calling them vulgar because I don't think they are. They're very sophisticated, literate, you know, likable people from what they say and how they come across. But there's something about the need for them to do it that is vulgar.
Especially when they have this machine around them that one would think. We sort of compare podcasts to, you know, radio or television of old. But is it that we kind of assume that you wouldn't need to? Like it's not like you ever promote... obviously you do massively promote a talk show or something like that, but it feels different. Like they're not promoting it on the show. Well, they kind of are, aren't they?
Well,
sorry.
Well, I mean,
the analogy doesn't quite hold.
you know, an advert break in a traditional radio or television show. I mean, I know that that's not promoting the show itself, but it's sort of, you know, it's adjacent to what we're talking about. It's sort of disassociated from the actual content itself, because it's not like it's the presenter that will be reading out the adverts or whatever and doing that work of sort of promotion directly themselves. There's a sort of a conceptual divide between the content that you're enjoying and the advertising that pays for it.
You know, you're enjoying the advertising to get the content, but the two aren't mixed.
Whereas, you know, with podcasts, it's like the podcasters themselves do the advertising. And there's clearly a good commercial reason for that, which is that you grow to know and like the podcaster. And when they say, you know, buy this, you know, brand of sponge or whatever, you're like, oh, yeah. Well, if they think it, then I'll do it. Yeah. You know? Which is
But then
fine.
You think about it for 20 seconds. And it's like, oh, no, they've been paid to say that. They probably don't use that sponge. And then you lose a bit of respect for them, but not enough to stop listening.
Yeah.
It's almost like they're using their social capital as a currency as you watch.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm going to cash some chips in here. And
anyway, but this is actually a different issue, isn't it, from self-promotion?
Yeah, exactly. We should separate advertising from promotion. Advertising, we're not advertising because no one wants to advertise with us.
Because we have like 10 listeners.
I would absolutely sell a bit of my soul for that sweet, sweet.
Yeah. I don't know what I thought when we started or when we were planning the podcast. I don't know really. I kind of had in my mind that, you know, oh well, maybe it will be successful and we'll become millionaires, but maybe it won't. And either way, I think that one of the reasons why we haven't done it is because I don't think it was actually the reason we started it was not for money, right? Not really.
Not at all, actually.
I mean, the whole thing was about just because we thought it'd be fun. And
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I mean, to do something like this expecting to get rich off it would be extremely foolish.
Yeah, very hubristic.
And of course, we're not going to get famous because we're anonymous. Which is another poor step.
Yeah. Well, I mean, maybe that's another reason why I haven't been sort of super keen to promote it, because I just feel like I'm just not comfortable with my identity being sort of out there associated with all of these thoughts and words. And I guess that's a kind of it's not an admirable thing at all. I think it's just, that's just cowardice, I think. I just think that...
Yeah, but then it does raise the question, why have we gone to all this effort and put this stuff on the literal internet and on Spotify and on Amazon Music or whatever it is?
Yeah.
And on Apple, if we don't actually want anyone to listen to it.
Well, I do want people to listen to it. I do want people to listen to it, but I don't want it to... But I guess it's like... I want people to listen to it because it's interesting.
Mm.
You know, and if it's not interesting, then I don't blame people for not listening. You know, if we're rabbiting on again about quantum theory when neither of us really understand it again, then, you know, fair enough. Nobody wants to listen to that. I think that it's a tricky one, isn't it? Like, what is it that we're getting out of it by sort of publishing it, even though we're not promoting it? And I guess that... I know, I quite often will listen back to episodes when they're put up online in order to check I haven't said anything terrible, sort of inadvertently. I like the fact that to me, it feels like making little monuments, right? Like little artifacts that we've made and publishing them makes them sort of real. It means that it's not just between you and me. They're real, they exist, they're out there, they're an artifact that other people can theoretically stumble across and enjoy or appreciate or whatever. So it's like it's that act of creation that I think is important from my perspective. And it doesn't really bother me that maybe only two or three people will find that thing and appreciate it. The fact is that it's real and it's out there and it's a thing that we did, and you know, hopefully it's good. That is what's important to me, is that sense of we've created something and it's good, you know, fine.
Yeah.
If only three people see it, it's still good. Like, you know.
Yeah. Shout outs to Guy in Southampton.
Southampton man.
Guy in Philomath, USA. the guy in Ashburn, USA. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Hope you enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, actually, yeah, creating something good is a good point there. Because one of the things that attracts me to this whole project is the technical aspect. It's actually the process of creating something good. Mm. I've already bored our extensive audience to tears with my audio engineering episode. But that
was a great episode. I thought it was a great episode. I feel like we really got into somewhere interesting about like the brain with all of that.
Yeah.
I thought it was great.
Eventually, yeah.
Anyway.
But the challenge of taking a conversation and packaging it up into a podcast format, yeah, I found that very satisfying. Mm. And likewise, I mean, the website, we haven't mentioned that yet. Build the whole website, you know.
What's the address of the website for our four listeners? Don't even know, do you?
I don't know. echoes-underground.com. The dash is important because there's a wedding band in the USA somewhere called echoes-underground.com. Only broke ranks after we'd started this.
It would be really fun if it turns out that they are also just a band that's in it for the pure satisfaction of creation and actually not very commercially successful. And then one day we just kind of, you know, did a crossover thing where we just interviewed Echoes Underground, the wedding band, or something like that, and they could, you know, they could do the intro, they could do a special intro music for that episode. I wouldn't want to relegate your shamanic drum at all. It's iconic.
Yeah, much, I made much a loved for this.
Yeah, much loved by our listeners, I'm sure.
Did it myself.
Yeah. But no, yeah. So for you, it's about that learning that sort of craft of being able to produce something.
Yeah, and also I have an interest in things like graphic design that rarely gets an opportunity to.
Well, I think
I find it fascinating. Yeah,
I think the graphic design on our podcast is absolutely phenomenal. I think you do a fantastic job. You know, it looks really
professional. The whole branding document and sort of, you know, the
it was
setting
fun.
Space we wanted to hold. Yeah,
I guess I feel like you know, when one day we stop doing this and for whatever reason, and you know, we feel that we've done it and we're satisfied with it, I think that we'll be able to look back on it and be like, well, you know, that was really good. And I don't think that listener numbers will really affect the extent to which I'm proud of it or not, actually.
Yeah, on our deathbed, it won't be, oh no, I wish I got more listeners. It was, oh, I'm glad I did that thing. That
yeah.
was interesting.
No, I always think that it's nice, the idea that, you know, if something... I was thinking about this the other day. It was sort of a bit of a macabre thought, but, you know, this is welcome to my head. I was thinking that if something happened to me, for whatever reason, if I got run over by a bus or something, it would be nice that there were sort of, you know, 20-plus hours of me just chatting to you out there. Because, you know, if anybody did want to occasionally, you know, remember me, which I'm not saying they would, they could just listen, and that would be nice, you know?
I've had feedback from friends overseas saying it was actually quite nice listening to our podcast because it's like having us in the same room chopping off as we always do when they're there. And again, the sound quality helped with that as well because it made it feel like we really were there.
Yeah. How sentimental and nice. But anyway, that's what I was
saying. Also, it kind of relies on me continuing to pay £13 a month to rss.com to keep the thing up.
Well, okay, yeah, that's true. But we do have the files, don't we, on our own?
Yeah, on my laptop. It's obviously going to last forever.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it'll be on the cloud somewhere, won't it? Have you not got it on the cloud? Stored on the cloud? On drive?
Yeah, because obviously that remains forever as well.
All right. Yeah, I know. Yeah, but all right. Well, okay. Nothing remains forever. But the point
is another problem with the internet is it is completely ephemeral. I have a plan to print these out on CDs. Even CDs only last 20 years or something, don't they? 50 years.
Well, that's an interesting question, isn't it? It's like, what would be the most enduring, hard-wearing sort of media format? I guess probably...
It'd be printing out the transcripts.
Yeah, I was just about to say, writing out the transcripts. But then you would lose the essence, the living essence of a...
It is a lot. I guess you could go back through it and do a kind of Socratic, you know...
Plato to Socrates. Yeah, that's a nice idea. I mean, I don't know. Then we'd really learn whether we were chatting nonsense or something, wouldn't we? Then we'd really find out the quality of our
discussion. Face to face with,
face to face with our sort of non sequiturs.
but then you read the dialogues, and I mean, it's full of that.
Yeah, I guess that's
true. They were the podcasts of their age.
Yeah,
I've said it.
Yeah, you said it. Yeah. I suppose, yeah, it's like pamphlets, isn't it? You know, it's just sort of a weird sort of pamphlet format, but sort of digital. Anyway, So in conclusion, I don't think, well, not conclusion. One initial conclusion might be that one reason we haven't promoted it is because we actually, it's not what it's about.
We don't care.
We don't care, yeah. and so what have we got so far? First of all, promoting it is embarrassing.
Yep, vulgar.
And second of all, we don't care. Or at least we think we don't care.
Yeah, we've told us, we've convinced ourselves that we don't care.
And that's probably most of the answer.
I've got another one.
Yep.
Like, I enjoy every aspect of creating these. Mm. I enjoy the conversations. I enjoy the editing. I enjoy building a website. I would not enjoy posting on Twitter.
No. I felt very uncomfortable doing those two hype posts on Twitter. I was like, this is just weird. I just immediately adopted a voice that wasn't really mine. And sort of immediately adopted this sort of promotional vernacular with exclamation marks and things like that.
Exclamation marks?
I think so. I'd have to look at them again. But
I don't.
Yeah. I just felt wrong. Felt like a lie, felt like a betrayal of myself.
Yeah. Integrity just torn up.
Just didn't like it.
And all that, and it was the Christmas episode as well, wasn't it? Which is by far our worst performing of any...
We should just delete it. Delete the Christmas episode, delete the tweets, just forget it ever happened. Yeah, because the whole thing is that we are Echoes Underground. Like, the point is, our whole vibe is that we're underground. You know,
yeah.
It's supposed to be.
You should have to find us.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. We're like one of the rarest little Easter eggs in the whole of whatever the big game. I don't know, Zelda. And if you find it, you are one of a very, very select few.
Elite. Yeah.
Elite. Yeah. Yeah. I was still remembering Zelda. Did you ever play Zelda?
I never played Zelda. But tell me about it.
Well, there were three different types of arrows, if I remember rightly, that you could get for Link's bow. There was like there were the fire arrows, there were the ice arrows, and I think there was one more. You'd like the I can't remember. But anyway, one of these types of arrows that you had to get from this sort of jail in the desert, and you had to use the keys in exactly the right order. And if you didn't, this was before, save games could get you back, like, because you messed it up. It was, everything was Iron Man mode, pretty much. And I messed up the sequence and I never got the arrows. And I remember for hours, as a sort of nine-year-old trying to get them, trying to find a way around. And there just was no way. And it haunts me to this day because they were just the other side of this one final locked door, but I'd run out of keys and there were no more keys. And I remember even going onto the sort of the rudimentary internet as it was then, and printing out a walkthrough.
Yeah, you had to buy magazines back then.
Yeah, well, my dad was fairly tech savvy, and
I can imagine you being an unusually internet savvy house.
And he did.
Contrast to mine, which
I sent him often to find this walkthrough, which he downloaded from a website and printed out for me. It was a good wadge of A4 paper just for the whole game. Somebody had just sat there and written it all out. And I remember finding the right section and realizing that there was no hope because there were only a certain number of keys. And
was the idea of starting the whole thing again beyond you?
I think so. I mean, I was 8. I don't know. It still haunts me to this day. But anyway, I feel like our podcast is those arrows. I think they were ice arrows, I think. Anyway, there's a little trip down through my brain.
Deep dive into the subconscious.
Yeah. Deep dive. Yeah, Zelda's really there. Very, sometimes I will, when I'm just bored or I'm nervous or I'm, or just anything, I will hum tunes from Zelda. because there was this, it was all about this ocarina, which is basically just a recorder, and you had to play the tunes on it using the sort of the game controller, and playing the right songs with the right notes did certain things in the game, so you had to hit the buttons in the right order to play the right notes.
That's quite gnarly. Yeah,
and I still to this day will sit there and hum like tunes,
the appropriate tune.
Yeah mental. And then bringing it back to AI, I saw the other day that there was an AI video on that was just a sort of an AI imagination of Zelda. So it was like the sort of the environments of the game rendered by an AI, and it was uncanny. I was weird because it was all so there in my brain, even after God knows how long, 25 years. Mm. It was like I recognised every single bit of it. You know, these things go in really deep when you're like 8 or 9.
But they go in deep anyway. I mean, recently, Final Fantasy Rebirth and Witcher 3, they're in there. Mm. I mean, you know, no one says it's weird if a book sticks with you for life or if a song sticks with you. And yet, one of these games which you actually spend, 40 hours playing, 60 hours playing, I mean, that's longer than you take reading a book. Mm. And yeah, everyone says, "Oh, yeah, it's really weird if Zelda sticks around with you for life." But if Moby Dick sticks around with you for life, that's fine.
Mm. I mean, in some games, as we've already discussed, I've played for far longer than 60 hours. I don't think about how deep parts of Iron 4 is in my mind. There's hundreds of hours.
I guess the trashy ones hit a bit less. Yeah.
I do find that it helps my understanding of the Second World War, though. Or at least it gives me the illusion of understanding it better.
You understand one particular alternative history where...
Yeah, it's more like the scale,
Yeah.
Is it like the scale of operations at that kind of really global level, when you're dealing with sort of divisions and armies and, the map.
Yeah, I mean, that was something that only really hit me quite recently. I went through a phase during COVID of watching various classic documentary series like Civilization, which is a banger, but then also The World at War, absolute banger, narrated by Laurence Olivier, and a lot of the key players were still alive to be interviewed. And so you have some German U-boat captains of narrating the best day of his life, where he managed to find this unguarded convoy and just destroy it. But even there's the Japanese admiral who did Pearl Harbor. He's there just having an interview saying, we nailed it.
Yeah, but he missed the carriers though, didn't he? So he didn't nail it.
Well, he got a good response.
Yeah. he certainly stirred up the hornet's nest. But it's interesting. I'm reading Stalingrad by Anthony Beaver. And it's... I have to kind of ration it, actually, because it doesn't exactly cheer you up. Like, it's
no.
It's very much man's inhumanity to man. You're like, oh my God, this is bleak. It's just bleak in all directions. Like, you're like, do I feel sorry for these Germans? It's like, on one level, like the human level. And then you're like, do I feel sorry for these Russians? It's like, well, yeah, on the human level, but just everybody's a kind of a bad guy. And you're like, well, it's just awful. it's just horrible. it's obviously fascinating from a sort of historical point of view, but you're kind of like, oh my God, like, this is bleak on every single level. It's bleak from the level of the individual experience all the way up to the overarching ideologies that are sort of at play, and you're like, oh my God, this is just evil, sort of having an absolute bonanza. You just can't believe it happened, right? It's just mental. Absolutely mental. You just have a reality check and you're like, what were these 250,000 Germans doing in Stalingrad, being slowly starved to death in the middle of winter? Like, well, how did this happen?
a lot of people made a lot of decisions to get to that point.
Like, there's a lot of decisions that have to be made until you get to there. And then you just think of like the individuals on both sides who are like actually, in these like terrible conditions. And you're like, oh, this is just terrible. I mean, I'm not a sort of a a pacifist or anything like that, but it does make you kind of think, like, God, war is just stupid. Like, it's just really dumb.
Like, yeah. Like, surely there's a better solution.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's this bit
that, give away a bit of territory, I don't care.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's like, you can have that bit of grassland, you know, whatever. Like, it's...
And you can have a Donbass.
Careful. You know my thoughts on that. there's this bit where the Soviets send this truce envoy to the Germans, to the Nazis, and it's because Anthony Beaver got into the Kremlin archives because he was doing this in the late 90s or early noughties.
Of course, he had that brief window where he could.
Brief window, yeah. He's got the kind of blow-by-blow account from the Soviet perspective of what happened to these envoys. And they go over and, you know, is it in minute detail? Because, of course, they wrote up a full report for the NKVD or whatever. And, you know, it's unbelievably civilized. And you can tell, you can just feel... From the account, the longing on both sides to simply just be normal human beings to each other and to actually just be friends and get along in this utterly surreal situation where they've just crossed the lines in the most brutal and horrible fight imaginable. And they're sitting down in this bunker, you know, and they're just kind of sharing some cigarettes and, you know, they share a joke. And then the message comes back from the sort of the Sixth Army's high command, like, no, we're not dealing with you, we're not taking any messages, you're just going to have to go back. And the sort of the bleakness of that after that, like, little bit of sort of human sort of, you know, interaction is just, the bleakness is just crushing. And you just think,
yeah, that is horrible. Yeah,
you just think, oh my god, like, what are these people doing? You know, they're mad. And the German soldiers celebrating Christmas in, 1942, December the 5th, 1942. And the accounts from it are that all of the German soldiers were, well, not all of them, but the majority of German soldiers were unbelievably sort of selfless and altruistic to each other this Christmas. You know, they had tiny little scraps of bread that they gave as presents when they're starving to death. And they, you know, they gave it to each other and they shared their very last cigarette, you know, with their mate. And, you know, the whole thing was just to bring a little bit of joy to one of your comrades. You know, that was all they cared about. And they, you know, the real genuine sort of, I don't know, you'd call it like Christianity, wouldn't you? Like Christian spirit of selflessness. But in the context of that, they have rampaged through, you know, Russia doing absolutely unspeakable things to thousands upon thousands of people, quite consciously. You know, there's no...
They knew exactly what they were doing.
They know what they're doing, and
believed it was right. Yeah.
Yeah, and believed it was right, exactly. And then how can those two things exist side by side in the same people? It's just a really, you know, those little gestures of utmost altruism and selflessness, just for the joy of a fellow human being in the midst of utter darkness. And it's the same people who are committing these unspeakable atrocities on their way there, and it's the same people who are not feeding their own prisoners of war. Like, it's just like, what? It's very, very confusing. Sort of trying to puzzle it all out, you know, as a sort of study of humanity. Anyway, my thoughts on that.
Yeah, and that's why we haven't been publicizing this podcast.
Why is that? Distraction.
No,
I mean,
no, absolutely no reason. No, but
what are you reading at the moment?
We're going off topic here, aren't we? So you know, in the Terry Pratchett episode, we mentioned Fritz Lieber and
the mouse, Fussard,
and Grey Mouse stories. Yeah, I thought I'd actually read them. And A, they're excellent. B, yeah, Terry Pratchett's a complete rip-off of him. But also, so is kind of every fantasy story written. it is actually, it's like finding the motherlode.
Is it?
Yeah. Every fantasy archetype was created in those short stories.
And it was him creating them, was it?
Unknown.
But it's the earliest you've traced it back.
Yeah, I haven't put much effort into it. I'm just enjoying the short stories about a barbarian and his wily sidekick cutting around being bad guys and stealing jewels. Yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, we can look forward to the benefit of your insights in our next Terry Pratchett episode, which for the committed Terry Pratchett listeners, of whom I think there was at least one, wasn't there, because he wrote a Wikipedia entry. the good times are going to roll again with episode 4, Mort, coming soon.
Yeah. I'm stoked. You're actually promoting it there.
I am.
Well done.
But in a sort of, I don't know, quite ironic way, in the knowledge that nobody's listening.
Yeah, exactly. I think
they're certainly, even if they are one of us, they're certainly not listening by this point of this episode.
Well, exactly. I think there is a pretty clear division between the people who like our Terry Pratchett episodes and the people who like everything else.
Is there? That's interesting. Yeah, do they get different audience, do they?
Hard to tell, but...
Well, we like them both.
We do, yeah.
It's the important thing.
If you haven't been listening to those episodes, Tom, you should give them a go.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Tom's got the whole E&M Banks series of sort of whatever it's going to be. However many are there?
I'm very excited about them.
12. Yeah. 12 episodes. I think there'll probably be at least 20 in us on E&M Banks, because there's not only the novels, there's also the implications thereof.
Yeah. Then we could always do the E&M Banks literary fiction alter ego of his. And
maybe the E&M Banks one is the way to actually make this podcast successful, because the Banks is surprising, has some, you know, some surprisingly powerful fans. You know, Musk is a classic example. Elon Musk loves E&M Banks.
Yeah, so we should get him on our podcast.
Well, he might listen to it. He might search in. You know, he might on his
yeah, if we promote it in any way.
Well, maybe we'll just write one factual post on X. We have recorded a 20-part E&M Banks podcast extravaganza, and then just kind of like just post that, full stop. It's not promotion, it's just a fact, right?
Exactly.
And then maybe when his kind of, you know, Uber bot that feeds him all of his information from X, he'll be like, Elon, there's this thing that these guys are doing it, you know?
So is that the solution to this promotion thing then? Just to make sure it's written somewhere public that we're doing a thing, and then it's there if people want it. We're not pushing it. We're just placing a monument, saying, you know, it's like a signpost.
Yeah, yeah. For the
if you're interested in this thing, here's an option.
The AI bots. Yeah. So maybe we should just publish on the website a kind of a episode list. This episode, we ramble on about things that are not connected to the title of the episode.
We sort of circle around it.
Yeah.
Well, also, that's every episode. Yeah,
that's true. Yeah. we should do that. And then, you know, then the internet sort of custodians will see it, and the AI will see it, and we'll be assimilated into this kind of grand Borg melange that is the future of our culture.
And at the same time, we won't feel compromised. We won't feel vulgar.
No. Not too vulgar, anyway.
Yeah, a little bit grubby, but
yeah,
it's like putting a sign above your shop or something. It's like...
Yeah, it's acceptable. It's tradition.
Yeah.
The gods allow it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, yeah, that could be the conclusion of this amuse-bouche episode then. Is there anything else, anything else you want to get off your chest?
No, you should be the one doing it.
I don't think so.
We get an AI bot to do it. Just pay an AI agent just to publish respectful tweets.
No, I'm going to veto that. I don't want that.
But I mean, it wouldn't have to be us. We wouldn't be doing the compromising or being vulgar. It'd be just a bot.
You know, no. It's just there's. I don't know. Maybe. I don't know, but I don't even like thinking about promoting it. I don't even like thinking about it. It just feels like a lot.
Yeah, you're right. It's the thought rather than the action that's the important bit. We're orthodoxic rather than orthopraxic.
Yeah. I just don't want to.
Even if you're not physically typing it out, if it's happening,
Yeah, I mean, we haven't even really dug down into what clearly is a big psychological issue for me, because I actually, just thinking about that now, even though that makes perfect sense, because we wouldn't have to be actually doing it ourselves other than just paying the bot. But even then, I just don't want to do it at all. Even if somebody said to me, yeah, I'll do it for you, I'd kind of be like, I don't really want you to. I actually quite like the idea that it's a sort of hidden thing. It exists, but it's also hidden. I quite like that.
Yeah, you're right. You kind of undermined that with your two tweets.
I did. And that's why I feel so bad about them. Maybe I'll delete them.
Mm.
But I like the idea that it's a sort of a little gemstone that's underground and only a few people know about it. And only a few people will ever listen to it. But it's still there. I like that. It makes me feel...
Yeah.
Safe and happy. but also proud. Whereas if it, you know, trying to show everyone the gem just cheapens the gem.
It does, yeah. Putting it on display.
Yeah. I don't want to do it. I don't want to do it.
Yeah. Let's not do it.
Yeah, let's not do it. Let's just see what happens. How many do you think that we'll end up doing before we call it a day? It's your gut. It's your gut response.
I can see us taking breaks sometimes.
Mm.
Or, you know, not doing it every week sometimes.
Mm.
There's no reason, because, I mean, it's quite nice having a chat with you.
Yeah. I'd definitely like to get to 50.
Yeah, we'll do that, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe 100. But yeah, maybe it's something that we can kind of switch on and off at different parts of our lives. Be quite fun, actually, then to, like, listen to them back when we're old. I know, but that's genuine. The sort of the macabre, sort of like weird thoughts I have about it, because it's like, oh, it'll be really nice to, you know, in 20 years' time, when I'm sort of whatever I'm going to be in 20 years' time, I mean, God knows, be able to listen back and be like, oh, yeah, 2025 or 2034, like, having that conversation, the young man that I was, or semi-young man that I was. Yeah, I just think that'd be really nice.
And foolish.
Yeah, I just think that'd be really good. Yeah, how many
and
people
then your daughter
that?
Could listen to it as well. Yeah,
yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
She'll know her father better.
As if, like, can you imagine? Can you imagine? If your father went to you and be like, ah, I found some recordings from when I was when I was in my 30s, conversations with a very nice chap, and do you want to listen to them? Can you imagine?
No, I can't. But maybe you'll have, you know, that sort of relationship with your children.
Maybe. Yeah. Never know. That would be nice. But, yeah. Oh, well. Well, let's sign off there for that one, then. I know you're not going to do it, because you never do, but maybe some creator editing is in order for that.
I think this is unsalvageable. But
yeah, probably.
So if you made it this far, thank you, dear.
Thank you, Southampton man. Sorry for testing your patience. We'll be back with our slick, honed content next week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So slick.
Bye for now.
Bye.